Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope and Liturgy. In his general audience, Pope Benedict spoke about the right way to perform the liturgy. Bird's Eye View. We talked to the author of a new children's book about the Pope's daily activities, written from the perspective of a thrush perched on St. Peter's Dome. And Deadly Journey. We find out more about the perilous voyages undertaken by migrants on a desperate quest to reach Europe and what happens to them at their main landing point in Italy on the island of Lampedusa. Here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict spoke about the right way to perform the liturgy during his Wednesday general audience. Emma McCarthy reports.
If the liturgy is beautiful and dignified, it helps us to perceive the splendor of God. That was the message at the heart of Pope Benedict XVI's catechesis in his Wednesday audience held this week in a sunny St. Peter's Square.
Dear brothers and sisters,
the Pope's thought on the liturgy stemmed from his reflections on early Christian writers of East and West, in particular St. Germanus, Bishop and Patriarch of Constantinople, who in the 8th century openly opposed Emperor Leo III's campaign against the use of sacred images, judging them to be a source of idolatry. Because of his opposition, Germanus was forced to retire in exile to a monastery, where he later died. But his memory was not forgotten, and in the Second Council of Nicaea, which restored devotion to sacred images, his name was honoured.
The writings of Germanus, steeped in an ardent love of the Church and devotion to the Mother of God, have had a wide influence on the piety of the faithful both of the East and the West. He promoted a solemn and beautiful liturgy and is also known for his insights in Mariology. In homilies of the presentation, the Domation of the Virgin Mary, Germanus extols her virtue and her mission, a text which sees the source of her bodily incorruption in her virginal maternity, was included by Pope Pius XII in his Apostolic Constitution Munificentissimus Deus. I pray that through the intercession of St. Germanus we may all be renewed in our love of the Church and our devotion to the Mother of God.
In comments in Italian, Pope Benedict went on to say that God created man in his own image and likeness, but that this image has been sullied by human sin to such a point that it is almost unrecognizable to modern man. The Pope emphasized that sacred images teach us how to search for God in the face of Christ and the saints, who have been illuminated by holiness. Pope Benedict added that today we tend only to see what is negative in the Church, above all, its sins, but that with the help of faith, we become capable of seeing the Church in a more authentic way, so we may rediscover its divine beauty. In this way, a liturgy that is dignified and aims for beauty helps us all to rediscover the splendor of God.
I offer a warm welcome to all English-speaking pilgrims.
Among the thousands present at this week's audience was one very particular pilgrim who had made his way from America to greet Pope Benedict, and it was not for the first time.
I was involved with the Holy Father when he came to New York.
He is Joseph J. Esposito, New York City Police Chief.
Well, he had a tremendous influence on everyone in New York when he was there. I would hope that he would have the similar influence when he goes to Israel for peace. It's this thing we need, and I think one of the main ways we're going to get there is prayer, and who better than to tell us to pray for it than the Holy Father.
Upon all of you, I call in the Lord's Easter blessings of joy and peace.
And after greeting all the pilgrims in various languages, Pope Benedict XVI took his leave of St. Peter's Square. I'm Emma McCarthy.
A new illustrated children's book detailing Pope Benedict's daily activities has just been published in Italy, and an English edition is coming out in early May. Entitled Max and Benedict, the book is about a blue rock thrush's impressions of the Pope from his perch on St. Peter's Dome, and is written by Italian author and journalist Gian Perego. It follows on the heels of another book written by the same author called Joseph and Chico, which told the story of the Pope's early years from the point of view of a tabby cat. So what prompted Perego to write this latest book that gives the lowdown on Pope Benedict's busy daily routine? Let's hear from her.
The idea of this book came to me on the 14th of November 2007 because I was in St. Peter's Square for the general audience and I was observing the square and there were two herring gulls circling on the canopy under which the Pope sits. And there I had this idea to write something about the Pope using birds as a narrator. And I realized how tough is his job as a pope. He was there surrounded by 100,000 people. It was raining. It was November. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's so hard for a person who is not young to sit there for hours. And that was just the beginning of some thought that then I have about how engaged is the pope, also physically, not only mentally. It's really hard work. And he's always working, as far as we know.
What made you decide to choose a blue rock thrush as the narrator for your book?
Well, I wanted to use a bird, as I said. I had to find the right one. I think that not every bird can tell the story, a story about His Holiness. So I started a research about the birds who live in the Vatican. And it was quite tough. There are so many birds who live in Vatican. At the beginning, I thought to use a kestrel. There are many kestrels in Vatican. But then I met a special person, Fulvio Fraticelli, who is the scientific director of the Bioparco of Rome, the former Zoo of Rome. He's an ornithologist. And that's how I discovered the blue rock thrush as a bird who lives on the Vatican walls and on mainly on the Vatican Dome, St. Peter's Dome.
You mentioned that you had an audience with the Pope when you presented him with a copy of your book, Joseph and Chico. So what kind of person is he? Did you have a chance to chat with him?
I had the chance to chat with him for a few minutes, say 5-10 minutes. And I had the impression of a very kind and shy person and who has been really interested in my book, Joseph and Chico. He was mentioning some sentences and some things here and there in the book, and that impressed me a lot because I realized that he had really paid attention to my book. And that's what I think. He is a person who really pays attention to every single person, every single situation.
So he liked that book?
Apparently he did. He was very pleased.
Do you happen to know whether he likes birds or not? We all know he likes cats.
Well, I know that he likes nature very much. Yeah, in Bavaria, the nature is fabulous and almost everybody likes animals and birds.
Who helped to give you the information about the Pope's day and what he does? For instance, I noted you said that his cook sometimes prepares him delicious apple strudel. Now, you needed somebody inside the Vatican who is close to the Pope to give you that type of information, didn't you?
I have been reading a lot. To write this book that apparently is very short, it's 56 pages, it took me around one and a half year, because I have been reading almost everything that has been written about the Pope. Then I had the wonderful help of the Vatican CTV, Vatican TV. I was allowed to go there and have a look to a lot of films about him, even films that have not been broadcast, so I could learn a lot about his life.
Yes, I noticed, for instance, that you talked to, well, there was your description about how nervous people are before they meet the Pope, how they're adjusting their ties, smoothing their hair, or checking to see if their shoes are polished. Did you get that from this footage of CTV, the
yes.
Vatican TV service?
Yes, I did. And I like always to look at details because often details say more than larger sentences.
I also liked the bit, and I expect many readers will be interested to hear, of some of the somewhat unusual presents he's received. Can you tell us about some of those?
Yeah, there are some very funny things, like an oven to bake pizzas on wheels, or steering wheels from a Formula One car, and even some hands once. Some hands from Padua. A company, tractor manufacturer, gave him once as a present a big Watt tractor, and he has been blessing it, because he is always very kind to people who bring him a present, because he knows that every present made to him is made with a lot of love.
Your book shows that Pope Benedict's day is very busy. He has very little free time. What was the aspect of his day that most struck you?
Well, what impressed me is that it's a very long day. Benedict XVI, Josef Ratzinger, is not a young man. And you think that he starts so early and he's busy, terribly busy, all day long till the evening. I do not think that most of the people of his age could do the same kind of life 365 days a year. Even when he's on holiday, he's not really on holiday doing nothing. He's writing, he's meeting people. So that impressed me very much.
I notice, however, that he does take a bit of time off to have two strolls, doesn't he? Can you tell us a little bit about those two strolls?
Yes, this is very nice. Looking at the film I could see at the CTV and reading, I realized that almost every day he takes strolls, one just after lunch and another one around 4 o'clock in the Vatican Gardens. And this moment where he can have a contact with nature, with the fresh air, he likes walking like most of the Germans do. And he can look at the flowers, the trees, and at the animals who are there. And there is a real paradise of birds. You can find so many kind of birds, and I'm sure that the Pope is looking at them.
What message are you hoping to convey to your readers about the Pope, both his day and his character, in this second book about him?
Well, I want, first of all, that children and generally all my readers, families, understand that he is doing a lot. He's a very busy man, and that he pays attention to all sort of the aspect of the Catholic life. In the book, they have mentioned some of the basic ideas of the most important one, the family, for instance. And I wanted my reader to think about it.
As you discovered, he has a very busy day. He has very little free time. But how does he relax? And what do you say about his brief moments when he can relax towards the end of the day?
Usually, I learn he's playing the piano. We knew that the Pope likes to play the piano, playing Mozart. And so I had my little bird, Max, Blue Rock Trash, in a way interacting with him. And there is a point of the book when I am describing his holidays in Castel Gandolfo, where I have placed a cousin of Max, the narrator of my book, who is listening and singing together with the Pope when he's playing the piano.
Okay, let's look a little bit at this character of Max, the Blue Rock Thrush. What kind of personality are you seeking to portray with him?
Well, Max, who gets his name from the inscriptions in the marble stone that one can see on St. Peter's Dome. Max is a cheerful, happy little bird. And all I have written in my book is scientifically correct. Max is a type of bird who breeds in the Vatican, in Rome, and in all the Southern Europe and Northwest Africa. He's a very special bird, and I have chosen it also because he's mentioned in the Bible, in a psalm.
Now, your book has already been released in Italy. Have you had any feedback so far from readers there? What are they saying about it?
I got a few letters through my website. And apparently the people understood what I wanted to say with my book, and they like to know a little bit more on the Vatican as a natural place. We always think of Vatican as a place with the wonderful artistic buildings, a place of the Holy See. But nobody apparently before spoke of the Vatican as a place of nature, of birds, for instance. And apparently it has been appreciated.
I think many people, in fact, would be surprised to discover that that there are more than 70 species of birds that make their home in the Vatican.
Exactly. And birds are very important in our religion, because if you consider that in the Bible there are more than 300 species of birds mentioned.
I was speaking to Jan Perego, author of a new children's book about Pope Benedict. The Pope has frequently expressed his concern about the plight and treatment of migrants who risk everything to come to Europe. Earlier this month, he demanded urgent action by the European Union to stop the trafficking in migrants, saying the global economic crisis was driving more people to make the perilous journey. And the dangers of these journeys are apparent to all. How many of us have seen TV pictures of small, rickety boats crammed with illegal migrants approaching the Italian island of Lampedusa and wondered how such a flimsy craft managed to stay afloat? The island of Lampedusa, south of Sicily, was once known mainly as a sleepy tourist destination. But nowadays it's well known as the main landing point for rapidly growing numbers of illegal immigrants arriving in Italy by sea from North Africa. It's a deadly journey that sometimes ends in tragedy when bad weather strikes. For example, in late March, more than 200 African migrants trying to reach Europe drowned when their boat sank in stormy waters off the coast of Libya. But how often do we stop to think about the political and economic conditions in the migrants' homelands and the reasons that prompt them to pay huge sums of money to the people smugglers and risk their lives in this way? And what are conditions like in the detention centre in Lampedusa, where the illegal migrants often end up being held for several weeks at a time? In February this year, hundreds of Tunisian migrants at the Lampedusa detention centre rioted in protest at expulsion orders and clashed with security forces as they tried to escape from the facility. Human rights activists say the centre has suffered severe overcrowding after the Italian government decided last year to turn the facility into an identification and expulsion centre instead of a temporary reception centre. Gabriele Del Grande is an Italian author and human rights activist who is in charge of a website called Fortress Europe, which monitors deaths and disappearances of migrants at Europe's borders. He says the reports we read in the press of illegal immigrants drowning after their boats capsize en route to Europe is only the tip of the iceberg, and that the true number of victims is much higher.
Yes, actually, thousands of migrants have died. We, as the Observatory Fortress Europe, we tried to find in the international press all the news about it. And we found out that since 1988, at least 14,000 people have died. But actually, the real figures must be more high than this, because nobody knows what really happened in the middle of the sea. I mean, how many shipwrecks have happened without any journalists at right? About it.
But coming back to the conditions on these boats, the sanitary conditions, there's presumably no toilets, you know, maybe they were often run out of food and water. Can you give us some details?
Well, you can imagine a boat of 10 meters can take 200 to 300 passengers. As you told it, there's no boat, there's nothing. I mean, people, they just bring with them some water, some biscuits, something to eat. The travel normally is from 2 days to 3 days. Sometimes they lost their ways and they can spend even 1 week in the middle of the sea. And the problem is the weather condition, because sometimes when you find a stormy sea, you can find waves 4 meters, 5 meters high. It's the migrants themselves who are driving the boat often. And so the first night of stormy sea, they find the boat can capsize because they don't have the experience of how to drive the boat. Sometimes, as I told you, especially when there's nobody who knows the sea on the boat, speaking about the captains, they lost the way. And so it can happen that a boat spends 5 days, 6 days, even more in the sea, without water, without food, under the sun in the summer, or maybe in a very cold night in the winter. So people die.
And when they arrive, many of these migrants have been held at a detention centre on the island of Lampedusa. What are conditions like in this centre from what you can gather by talking to the migrants who've been there?
Well, actually, the condition of the centre of Lampedusa, it changed a lot since December, because until December 2008, it was only a centre for the first assistance of the people who arrived. I mean, migrants were intercepted at sea, they were brought to the centre, some doctors make a visit, and then they were transferred after 2 days, 3 days, to other centers all around Italy. Now, since December, what happened? The migrants who arrived and who have to be repatriated because they are not refugees, for example, Tunisians, Moroccans, Egyptians, they are taken in the center. So now you have a center with 380 places, which is hosting more than 1,000 people. So you can imagine the condition. There are people who are sleeping two persons in the same bed, on the pavement, even outside. In the month of January, there were 2,000 people. In the middle of the winter, they were sleeping outside in the courtyard of this center. And also we found some witnesses of beatings. It was February the 18th and a riot came out in the center, and the police, in order to take control, they start beating the migrants, and we have some witnesses of it.
And one of those witnesses mentioned by Del Grande is Hassan, a migrant from Morocco, who ended up in the detention center at Lampedusa after crossing by boat from his homeland. He said he saw the police beat the Tunisian migrants who were involved in the rioting.
In that moment, the police was so angry, so the police was beating the Tunisians. They closed the windows and the doors and they started to beat the Tunisians.
As we heard, the simmering tensions at the Lampedusa centre exploded into violence in February this year, and scores of both migrants and security staff were injured in those clashes. However, Del Grande says there are indications that staff at the Lampedusa centre administer tranquilizers to all the inmates in a bid to keep them calm. Let's hear more from my interview with him.
Is it true that the staff at this centre, apparently in a bid to keep the detainees calm, they administer tranquilizers to them on a regular basis?
Well, you know, we have no evidence, but some people from inside the centre told us that sometimes, for example, after lunch, everybody feels very tired and they want to sleep and they don't understand. They feel very strange that 600 people, suddenly they feel so tired. So what they suppose, the migrants themselves, they say that maybe they put some tranquilizers in the food. We don't analyze the food, so we don't know. We can't have an evidence, but we can suppose it. What is sure, we have many migrants who ask for these tranquilizers because it's such a stress situation in the center.
How much of a disappointment is it for these migrants when they discover that they're not really welcome in Italy, that many Italians, in fact, resent their coming, their presence here?
Well, you know, they're disappointed because for them it's a kind of investment. You know, they paid a lot of money to come here, they have relatives here. No, it's not always simply workers who are looking for a better life. I give you the story of a Tunisian man I told with him. He was inside the center of Lampedusa and actually wanted to reach France. Why France? Because he is married in France, and his wife and his daughter, they are living in France, and he was living in France, but he was deported to Tunisia. And when you are deported, you cannot re-enter legally in the country for a certain period. And so the only opportunity to take the boat and to risk again his life in the sea just to rejoin again his wife and his family in France. So you can imagine how disappointed you are. You are treated as a criminal inside the jail in that condition.
So what kind of job or profession do these migrants have? Do some of them come from professional backgrounds?
Well, you can find everything. You can find people from the University of Asmara in Eritrea or in Tunis. And at the same time, you can find people who cannot even read and write. For the refugees, normally they are well-educated, comparing to the migrants who maybe comes normally from a background of poverty.
How much money on average do they pay to make this very dangerous crossing?
Well, the crossing of the Mediterranean from Libya to Sicily, it depends. It's normally from €1,000 to to maximum 2,000. But it's not the only travel, I mean, they have to do. If people come, for example, from Somalia, from Eritrea, or even from Nigeria on the other side, on Western Africa, before they have to cross the desert of Sahara, and in this they can spend maybe another 500 euro, even more. People can spend even 1 year, 2 years, 3 years on the road, and often they can pay even two times, three times, because it's something illegal. You have no guarantees. So it can also happen that you give money to somebody and he escape with your money and you have to pay again. Or maybe you can be arrested in Libya the day before you have to leave. So after you are released, you have to pay again. So there are some people who can spend maybe 10,000 of euro. It depends.
So in fact, there are many people, as you say, who are risking their lives even before they get on the boats, and perhaps many people who are not making it across the Sahara. As you say, it's a very, very dangerous journey.
Yeah, of course. Even in the Sahara, it's not easy. Yeah? Maybe crossing the desert is more dangerous than crossing the sea. At least in the sea, you have some kinds of rescue organization, like the Coast Guard, especially the Italian Coast Guard. They are really doing a big effort to rescue people. But in the desert, you have nobody. We have a few news about it, but we can say that some thousands of people are dying in the desert. And they are coming to Europe. I mean, they are crossing to Europe.
And coming back to the migrants who end up in Italy, how many of them, what percentage of them do end up getting deported rather than being released eventually?
Very few people are deported. The majority of them, they apply for asylum. When you take, for example, in 2008, about 40,000 people arrived by sea and about 30,000 who apply for asylum. So you can say the majority, they apply for asylum. They come from Somalia, from Eritrea, from Sudan, from Nigeria. Then you have other people, especially from Northern Africa, who cannot apply for asylum normally, but not often are deported. They spend a couple of months in detention and after that they are released.
You said that, for instance, out of the 40,000 who came last year, that around 30,000 asked for asylum. Out of these 30,000, how many were granted asylum? How many were given asylum?
Well, let's say around 10%, they receive a political asylum, and around 40%, they receive a kind of humanitarian protection, you can say. So it means one half of them, they receive some kind of documents, and the other, they receive an order to leave the country, but they stay here because it's impossible to repatriate them because there's no cooperation with the embassies, and at the same time, it's impossible to give them a document. That's also the real problem. In Italy, we have maybe 500,000 of undocumented migrants, and the majority of them, they have a job, they have a house, they have somebody who would really like to make them a contract, but they can't. It's simply impossible. Because once you receive the order of expulsion from the territory of Italy, you cannot regularize your situation.
I was speaking there to Gabriele Del Grande, Italian author and human rights activist. That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so do send us an email. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.